to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Welcome to another episode of Checkpoint Intimates. We are your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one to talk about a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot. This week I'm joined by Lisa.
Hi.
How are we doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Now, we're here because we want to talk about video game ownership.
Yep.
And like the digital rights movement and everything to do with that. And the reason I wanted to talk about this was because recently Google Stadia hosted an Ask Me Anything, and one of the top questions was, what happens if Google cuts support for Stadia? Do we lose all of the games we've purchased?
Which is a valid question to ask.
Such a good question, such a fantastic question, and something people don't often think about, right? Because you buy a game, you own a game, but do you really own that game if somebody like Google needs to be involved for you to play it? Because as soon as Google isn't involved, you can't play that game anymore. They've shut down the service, they've turned off everything, and you can no longer access that library of games. And it really does beg the question, do we own the games we buy anymore?
I think raising that question makes you realize just how precarious it is, how much you're depending on a different platform or somebody like some company like Google to call the shots on that. I have had nightmares about what if the Epic Store becomes the next big thing and Steam dies, where will all my games go?
Like, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it is this persistent question, right? And obviously this doesn't relate just to Google and their Stadia. It doesn't just relate to Steam. It's everything. If you buy a physical game, then it's yours. You've got it. You can trade it. You can sell it. You can play it, right? Nothing's ever going to stop that from happening. But as soon as online becomes an option and as soon as digital distribution becomes involved, then you don't have all of the same rights as you used to. Now, I remember that when I first bought the Orange Box back in so long ago, right? And the Orange Box is a collection of Valve games that include Team Fortress 2, Half-Life 2, and Portal.
God, that's like a really good throwback thing.
Right? Now, yeah. I remember when I bought those, this was my introduction to Steam, I'm fairly confident. Or it might have been with Counter-Strike, actually. But regardless, they would have been purchased at a very similar time, and that became my introduction to Steam. And for the very first time after I purchased these games, I realized I couldn't return them to the store. And the reason you can't is because as soon as you install that disc, you create a Steam account and it locks this particular disc to your Steam account. And now those games are locked to your Steam account. So you can't return it to the store, obviously, because the next person who puts that disc in their computer will be met with, oh, what's your login information? They'll be like, oh, I don't know. Like, whose login information is this? I don't know. It's mine, right? So all of a sudden, there is this gap between ownership and purchasing.
Yeah.
Just because you purchase something doesn't necessarily mean you own it in the way you used to.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the piracy question, really, being like with the internet and the rise of technology, companies have so many ways available to them now to have more control or to try and exercise more control to stop piracy, but it also challenges those notions of ownership. And I think in the worst case scenarios, the person who suffers the most in that is the end user. And I think that we're still kind of in a limbo space where we're trying to get to a point where both parties are happy with where they're at. And technology changes so quickly that those things catch up a lot more slowly. Things like the law, piracy, copyright management, all that stuff is, you know, it's kind of in a limbo zone at the moment, I think.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Look, like, laws cannot keep up with the speed the internet moves at.
Yeah.
And the speed that the technology industry moves at. And so we do find ourselves in these situations where nothing is clearly defined, right?
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, let's go back to the Google Stadia suggestion. And let's say all of a sudden, 3 months after the Google Stadia releases, Google's like, this isn't working.
Yep.
And they totally cut it off. And this is an absolute possibility, right?
Very
true. We're talking about a company who has a history and a reputation for continually trying to make new innovations, right?
Yep.
They've entered into every single possible outlet, right? And whether it's something like Google Hangouts that didn't work. Google Plus at least still runs, but no, it was not very successful. Like, obviously, Google has success in so many different areas, but they have tried in so many different others, and you probably don't even know about it, but they've tried in so many different others and failed, and so they just cut support, right? Like, why would they support something that isn't getting used?
Mm-hmm.
What if the same happens with Stadia, right? Let's say like a 1,000 or even 100,000 people jump in and buy games, and Google's like, well, that's not nearly enough. We're looking for millions, obviously. So they cut support, and these people are left with no games, you know, maybe a month or 3 months after release. And it's like, well, you never actually owned those games. Did you read the EULA? No, yeah, you probably didn't.
No,
you don't own those games. Google owns those games. You're just buying a license to use it for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And that amount of time is totally undisclosed and could end at any moment.
But I guess that's the only way to do it, with the subscribing format, which is what a lot of companies seem to be pushing for, sort of like you pay a monthly fee or something, like you do with Xbox.
Sure. I mean, that kind of solves part of that issue, doesn't it? Because if you're purchasing a game outright and paying full price, you're probably expecting to have it forever.
The only issue I have with Google Stadia, though, is that they were saying you can stream the games, but you would have to have a really good internet connection. Oh,
that's
that.
A whole nother discussion.
I know.
So I do not have a good internet connection. My roommates can back me up on this. We have a terrible situation at the moment.
Yeah, same here. We can commiserate about it together.
But, yeah, and I guess the question then becomes, now that we all understand that, I guess, you don't really own your games in the way you used to, is this okay? Is this something we're fine with? Is it okay to put trust in these companies? Is it okay that this is the direction that the video game industry is clearly moving towards?
I think, unfortunately, in the time that we're in, you can't really stop that trend from happening. If you look at what's happening with iTunes right now, that they recently announced that Apple is shutting iTunes down and they're forcing people to start using Apple Music instead, like, I have an iPod. I was like, what's going to happen to all my music? It's basically the same question. But I think because we're sort of in between two stages of offering certain digital goods, it's clear to me that we're not there yet. But at the same time, I do hear you. I would be frustrated to think, if I bought this game however many years ago, if I bought this music however many games ago, I want to try and buy it again and end up paying 3-4 times for a product that I should already own. That just doesn't seem fair to me.
Yeah.
Especially games can be expensive, even if they're already a few years old. Like,
and if you think of not just one game, but a library of games that you've purchased over, you know, a whole bunch of different years, all of a sudden, like, that's where the fear is, right? You said you're worried that Epic becomes the next big thing and Steam closes down. I'm less convinced that that's going to happen, but, you know, let's say in a hypothetical that did happen. Yeah, the fear of losing all your games is huge, because that, for me, is thousands and thousands of dollars worth of video games gone. And it's insane that that is a possibility, but at the same time, you know, we all kind of agree to it. And I think a lot of gamers know what they're in for. I think a lot of people are like, you know, you take the good with the bad, right? We lose some of our rights to ownership, but we get all these additional benefits that, you know, places like Steam offer, whether that's discounts or features or social interaction or whatever it is. Like, there are obviously benefits, but...
But you got to ask, do you really have the choice? Like, if you want to buy a game and everyone you know is on a particular platform and you want to play with your friends, then... You don't really have a choice but to buy it through that platform.
It's true.
So I think through that kind of question, you can see that the consumer is kind of, in many situations, the person who gets to bear the brunt of the financial cost.
I mean, the consumer has to go the path that the kind of these console or like PC distribution centers lay forth, right?
Yep.
Like, if there have been people who tried to do it differently in the past, places like GOG have been really good. They offer DRM-free...
They don't do that anymore now, do they?
No, I'm pretty sure they certainly do, yeah. Okay. That's kind of one of their big shticks. I'd be very surprised if they change that. But yeah, DRM, digital rights management, it's this thing where companies do get a lot of control, and they and it's basically there to stop piracy. It's there to stop people doing what I and my friends used to do back in school. We're in, like, computer technologies class, and when somebody would pass around a USB with Counter-Strike on it, and we'd all just play Counter-Strike while the teacher's not looking, right?
Like, I think that's a rite of passage for everyone.
That's how easy it used to be. You could just store it, pass it on, copy it, and move through it. You didn't even need piracy websites. You could just do it on USB.
Yeah.
But, like, times have obviously changed since then, because, you know, I do think that is unfair for a developer to have their game copy and pasted, basically,
absolutely,
and not get money for it.
Yeah.
I think that's unfair. And I think that's a big reason why the DRM movement has happened. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of consumers, like you and I, are fine with it happening for that reason. But then it's the fear of what might happen in the future because of this direction we've moved.
Yeah, I think I would love, because I do think what Epic is doing, where they're putting the developer first, is a really good thing. But part of me thinks maybe at some stage we'll have some sort of application that you can put on your device that unifies all your libraries. So you still have the feeling of having one central place where you go to for all your games, but you might purchase them through different sort of channels.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned that. There's actually a service, GOG Connected, is doing that exact thing you said. Now, it's not feature complete. It does not have support from every single kind of games distribution platform yet. Mm-hmm. But it is actually moving in that direction, and it's one of those things I've been keeping my eye on, because once again, GOG are almost the good guys in this kind of realm, where they are offering DRM free options. They are seem to do a consumer first approach, whereas a lot of other places are doing a developer first approach, or rather a myself first approach. but yeah, so that may well be something to look out for.
Yeah,
as well,
I think I would totally be fine with that, because I think it's not a big deal to go to purchase things through different platforms, as long as that dread of losing everything you've spent so long, like, purchasing and cobbling together doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once again, the more parties involved, the further you are from ownership.
Yes.
So
true.
I had this realization this morning, actually. At the time of recording, today was the day that For Honor was free on the Epic Games Store, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're listening, it's currently free, presumably, unless you're listening too far into the future, in which case it's something else. But yeah, For Honor is currently free at the time of talking, and so I installed it onto my Epic Games account, and it told me that I needed a Ubisoft account to run it. So you launch it through Epic, and it loads your Ubisoft account and plays through that. So all of a sudden, there's two factors between me and playing my game, or me and owning my game. I need both systems operating for me to launch and play For Honor.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. I have to say, I've been through what you're describing with a few Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah, Ubisoft seemed to be, like, pretty big on it.
Yeah, and when I bought a few titles on Steam, then it asked me to install a Uplay account, which I had installed them, like, on different discs on my machine, and then it couldn't run, and it was, like, a real nightmare, and I remember them being like, man, this shouldn't be that hard. Like, you buy a game, you play it. So I think from a consumer's point of view, that's probably the most annoying thing, is if you have to juggle like three or four platforms and run them at the same time. Like, it's just unnecessarily double handling, really.
For sure. And I think both you and I are primarily PC players, is that right?
100%.
Yeah. So
I mean, if somebody wants to send me a 3DS or a Switch, I would not say no.
So I think for us, this conversation means a bit more, because I don't think we have another option, right? Mm-hmm. There is really no other option to being a big PC gamer other than accepting the fact that you're losing some rights to ownership. I think those who play on console still obviously can buy physical copies of their games.
Yep.
In which case, those physical copies still, under most circumstances, will run until either the disc is damaged or broken, or until your console no longer works. But yeah, it's yours forever, and you can sell it and whatever. The small exception to that, I guess, is multiplayer video games, where mm-hmm. servers can shut down and all of a sudden you have nobody to play with and you can't connect to any kind of server, so therefore the game no longer works in that capacity.
You hear those sad tales about Guild Wars where somebody was like, I logged on and I was the only person for miles and miles.
Yeah. But at least there are other options on console as far as the physical releases. Most PC games just don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and if they do, you're buying a physical release game that then installs on a digital rights management platform.
When's the last time you've bought a I can't remember when I had the last time I bought
a physical game.
Like, somebody gave me Overwatch recently, but that's
on PC?
Yeah.
Ah.
But you would need a Blizzard account for that too. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't. I honestly couldn't tell you when the last time I bought a physical PC game was. A long time ago.
I think I must have still been like a teenager or something, or it must have been Rayman. My God, ooh, how old is Rayman?
What, the original?
Yeah.
Old.
Yeah.
Very old.
He's probably got arthritis now.
Yeah.
Poor Rayman.
But yeah, I think it's a super interesting prospect, the whole idea about game ownership, and I'm glad people are having this conversation now, and I'm glad that there are, I mean, sometimes there are answers. I want to give a shout out to some platforms, Steam included, who have said that if there is ever a future where Steam has to shut down, they would provide non-DRM versions of those games for those who own them.
Which is
those
great.
Purchase them, which is great. But you're taking them at face value. They have no legal obligation to do that. Maybe they, in fact, find themselves in legal struggle to do that, and they can't offer what they're saying. Like, we don't know until that future happens, and it's super interesting because eventually it's going to happen, right? It might not be Steam. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's a smaller player in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's somebody like Humble or itch.io or something like that, and all of a sudden you've lost games. Like, this conversation is going to pop back up when that happens.
For sure.
And it's going to be fascinating because it's one of those futures that I can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know what happens when a service like this shuts down.
Oh, no idea, but it's giving me chills. But I guess you have to be dynamic in the way you run your business and evolve with the times. That's the best you can do, really.
Yeah.
And I guess Steam has been here for over a decade already.
Yeah, over a decade. Yeah.
So hopefully, if they keep doing what they're doing and hopefully treating developers, you know, very well and giving them an incentive to publish on their platform. Who knows what could happen.
Anyway, that is all the time we've got. Lisa, thank you for joining me.
Anytime.
I've been Elliot, and thank you for listening. We've been talking all about digital rights management and game ownership. And tune in next week for more Intimate Goodness.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.